Welcome to Endless 08, a time loop anime podcast. I'm BJ.
And I'm Duffo.
It is 2008. We are watching and discussing anime from 2008, the year that it is.
And what a good year it is.
I'm so glad you agree.
2008, the year that Mario Kart Wii comes out.
Ah, yes. Oh, boy. What a
landmark.
Time.
You had a Wii at this time.
No.
Right? No?
I have never owned a Wii.
Wow, you missed out.
I know.
On a revolution.
I wanted one, and I'm so glad I didn't get one, because goddamn, that thing would have just collected dust after 2 months, but oh, I wanted one so bad.
Oh, really? No, I remember getting a lot of use out of mine. I think Link's Crossbow Training was the first game I ever got for it.
Yeah, of course, because it's the one cool game, and the rest of them were just kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, I guess.
Audience twitching there. So think about
the Wii sports one. Wii Sports. Yep.
2008, Super Smash Bros. Brawl comes out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot that was on that.
Lots of good stuff from 2008. Grand Theft Auto 4, Fallout 3, Metal Gear Solid 4.
Oh, wow. That was Yeah, that was. That is this year.
Yeah. Mm. If you're more interested in anime style stuff, Persona 4 is a 2008 release.
Ah, yep.
As is Mirror's Edge.
Oh, ooh, yeah, it was. Oh, boy. Wow. I did sink a lot of time into Mirror's Edge. I was bad at it. Damn, I enjoyed that game.
That's not the kind of video game we will be talking about today. Instead, we are going to be talking about some visual novels, because what we are watching today is a visual novel adaptation.
And, like, for whatever reason, the other day you sent me a couple of screenshots asking for some help, like diagnosing, like, game problems because the thing wasn't loading correctly or whatever. And
oh yeah, so screenshots in Japanese that I could not read.
And you know, like helping out, but I didn't twig that, oh yeah, this show is based on a visual novel. And on reflection, god damn, it is really based on a visual novel. I can see all of the like each of these are the different paths you can go down, and just like where all of the different flags would be for decision moments, I guess, or whatever. And I'm just like, oh wow.
Yes, this is the game Kimi ga Aruji de Shitsuji ga Ore de. Close.
Very good. Very good.
Or They Are My Noble Masters is the translation.
Which, like, is not how that translates. Just is not. I'm not even going to try and figure out how that translates properly, but that's just not it.
And it is a visual novel that is adapted to anime. I want to talk about our history with visual novels before this, because we played our first visual novel together. I went back and checked our Facebook Messenger logs.
Oh my god, no you didn't. No. What? They go back that far? What?
Because I was thinking about this, and I go, well, the first visual novel I ever played was Katawa Shoujo.
Yeah, oh my god, no.
And I'm like, I think BJ gave that to me.
I think I might have. Oh my god, I feel so bad. I still have the soundtrack.
Yes.
That game is a fucking fire soundtrack, and I've still got it.
So that was our first high school introduction.
I think it was, yeah. It was,
playing this dating sim. set in a school for disabled students.
Yep. I think it was pointed out to me at some point. Katawa Shoujo is, like, katawa is just quite a rude word. It means disability or disabled, but it's not the word you would use when describing a person who is disabled. I don't know exactly what that word is or what that phrase would be, but it's, as I've been told, it is not that.
Right. Well, it was a Western-made game that was put together by 4chan devs.
Yeah, so yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. I did not know at the time that it was made by 4chan. Mm. I think you explained that to me later, and then I went, oh, really? Wow. What a weird game. I don't remember any of the characters' names, but I'm just sitting. I'm honestly just embarrassed and shocked. I didn't think you'd talk about this. I didn't even know like this was the thing we would talk about. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
I mean, I've played several since. I don't think you've played several since.
No, I think I might have played one more, but I can't even remember what it was.
It's a broad genre categorization. I mean, Ace Attorney falls into this.
Yeah, okay. I've never played those. I've been meaning to. They are on my wish list. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But they look interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, when we're talking about visual novels in this context, in what is a H game or an Eroge?
Yeah.
Erogi?
Eroge.
Eroge.
Erotic game.
Yeah, right.
Take the first syllable of each one. Yeah, and those are, I guess you'd say, typified by you've got one protagonist and a bunch of suitors. And the game is just talking to each of the suitors and deciding which one you would like to have sex with and potentially develop a relationship with. There's obviously lots of different variations on that, but generally you play it to be able to see the sex scenes and then replay it again to see the other ones.
Yeah. We'll talk about how it ties in. I can't talk too much to the game because A, I couldn't get it installed, and B, only found out afterwards. There's not actually an English translation, not even a fan translation. Like, no one has cared enough about this shit to actually put through.
Which, based on the anime we watched, surprises me a bit.
Yeah, you think people would have been hard in the paint for this?
No, sorry, I should be clear. I don't think the audience would have been hard in the paint for it. I think the devs and the people who made the anime really, I feel like the people who made the anime really had time for this game and really had time for the source material, shockingly. Because I can't imagine, if based on what we've got.
I think you're right. I think there is a level of passion project to this.
Yeah, there really is, but it shocks me because based on what we got, it's not really worth it, to be honest. No. I want to call this trash, but not bad trash, but just kind of schlock. Like, we don't need this. This doesn't need to exist in the world. If this didn't exist, the world wouldn't be any different.
I have much harsher words for this show. But I will go through the production details first.
Please.
So the 2007 game that is based on is from a company called Minotaursoft. They're better known for a game called Magikoi that they put out a couple years later, which is about samurai girls.
Oh, okay.
Does better, gets an anime adaptation that also does better.
We're not going to watch that, thank God.
No, we are not.
Good.
Takahiro is the writer of this. They use like a single name pseudonym.
I was going to say, I think I've heard that name before somewhere.
He does go on to, starts out in games. This is his platform to jump into creating other things as well. He becomes the creator of Akame ga Kill.
Ah, that's where I heard it before.
Yes.
Right.
And 2024's Change Soldier is his big thing at the moment.
Cool, whatever. I don't know.
He's the lead writer on this thing. It makes its way over to Studio ACGT.
Okay. I feel like I should know that one.
They're a split off from Triangle Staff. It was a 90s studio that famously put out Serial Experiments Lane.
Right.
They shut down in 2000, and when it did split off, one of the split offs was ACGT.
Right. Okay.
The acronym for why I could tell, it's just the ACGT is in the bases of DNA.
Okay. So I'm assuming that the people that split off into ACGT were all the people that were part of the pervy stuff in Serial Experiments Lane?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is not what this studio does up until this point.
Oh!
They work on Duel Masters.
What? What? Okay.
They do Initial D, Fourth Stage.
Okay. Okay.
Now, hey, there is a very well animated Initial D.
Yes, there is. And that was one of my notes that I was going to bring up was that, like, again, this is such a weird, like, people put energy into this because there are moments like that where you're like, damn, this shouldn't be happening for this schlocky show.
And it's just because, they had the team that literally did Initial D.
Right, okay.
For a while on there.
Right.
Kino's Journey is their other big one they do. But up to this point, they are largely doing not this. They are not doing ecchi comedy. This is their first foray into this genre.
Okay. Does that change my opinions or anything or, like, open up new avenues? Not really. Okay.
Well, we'll talk about it as we go in. Do you want to describe the premise of They Are My Noble Masters?
So, you can help me with names because I don't have my notes on me and I just suck at names still. We had Ren.
Ren,
yes. Our main character. And his sister, Hato. Hato-ne-san.
Yeah, Mihato, yeah.
And they are both children of a very abusive father.
Mm.
They run away from home, go to the big city, and try and find work, and end up getting work as butlers for a high-class Japanese family.
Yeah. I'll press you on ages here. How old do you think Ren and Hato are?
This was a weird bit. Yeah, it's never explicitly stated, but, like, it feels like, oh, yeah, these guys are, like, you know, end of high school kind of level. But then they're also drinking. So they're definitely at least 20. Please tell me they're at least 20.
Well, she's a few years older than him.
Yeah, she's at least 2 or 3 older than him, I think.
Yeah, so I think she's 20 and he's probably 18.
Well, being Japan, that'd have to be 20 and then 22, because 20 is a drinking age. He definitely drinks.
He drinks?
I'm pretty sure we saw him drink at one point.
Huh. All right.
I might be wrong. He might. Anyway, they look younger than they probably are, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got that weird, weird relationship. Like, he seems to be relatively normal with his sister. Just like, you know, she protects him and he likes her and whatnot. Cool. Yep. She seems to have a, like, possessive, and it doesn't show up necessarily explicitly as sexual attraction, but she's definitely, I don't know, the undertones are there. I'm thinking, like, at any moment that she was on screen with him, I was just waiting for her to, like, try and kiss him or something.
She is a rat in the visual novel.
After learning that it was a visual novel adaptation, that made me immediately go, oh, fuck, she's that rat. Okay, great. I will say, like, because all of that kind of idea was not explicit, I applaud them for that. Like, they didn't bother to be like, ooh, does she actually like him in a very explicit way? It's very subtle. And if you're not, like, actively paying attention, you may not be able to see it. Good job, guys. Good restraint. Still problematic, but whatever.
So, this brother and sister run away from home from their abusive dad. They're trying to find work in the city of Nanahama.
The city of Nanahama, which I don't
like. One of the first fucking stills they show you here is of a ship with Yokohama on the side of it. They don't even commit to doing the full fictional city thing.
I was sitting there thinking, like, all right, I don't know what the Nana would be, but the Hama is definitely, like, taking, like, Yokohama is what they're trying to imitate there. But I was like, Nagano? But that feels wrong. I don't know. It was weird. So they just didn't even bother for some of it. Great. Cool. Awesome. So yeah, they end up with the family whose name I can't remember.
Yes, the Kuonji sisters.
The Kuonji family, yes. Oh, boy.
He rescues a girl who's fainting of heat stroke on the street, takes her back to her house. It turns out she lives in a massive mansion with her two also incredibly rich sisters who have a butler. They have a series of staff working for them there, and they manage to get themselves employed here at this mansion. Her as a maid and him as a butler in training.
Yes. I would like to some extent, compare this show to Family Guy.
Me too.
Oh, no, wait. What? I was sitting here, like, I was thinking beforehand, I was like, this is going to be a really weird comparison to make. It is not going to make any sense. I'm going to have to explain it.
No, it makes complete sense. I was talking to a friend about this. I said, it is if Family Guy was a mid-2000s etchy comedy.
Yeah, it's really, like, specifically what got to me was the fact that we've got all these things that happen that, like, there's two kinds of things that happen. One that happens is there's lots of, like, super-powered, supernatural, comedic moments that, like, are not explained and don't really necessarily factor into things. Like, when he first arrives, various things happen, and then somebody, like, jumps 30 feet in the air, and he's like, oh my god, what the fuck? And then the main butler comes out and, like, kamehameha's
him.
Yeah,
you have this early scene before they've explained anything where the butler is screaming at a man in a field, and then you see this little weird egg robot who is also screaming at him.
Yeah, it's bizarre, and there's these supernatural kind of things that, like, enter into it randomly for jokes and then disappear again. And the second part of that is there are a lot of, like, sequences and moments that are just daydreams and people going, oh, if she was a delinquent, maybe she would do this kind of thing. And it's just a comedic moment to be like, oh, yeah, she's, like, punk hair in a punk rock band doing the, like, playing a guitar on a stage with a bad song. And
yeah,
to me, those two kinds of things that keep happening throughout the show as the jokes feel like the just weird non sequiturs that happen in Family Guy when one of the characters goes, oh, it's like the time when such and such did such and such, and it's Peter Griffin beating up a giant chicken to death.
Yes, it is the exact same kind of referential humor.
Yeah, it's,
I think it fucking sucks a lot of the time here.
It does. It really does.
Because the joke is just the reference, and they don't do anything more with it. You mentioned the delinquent rock star thing. That is a perfect example. Because what they're doing there is they're referencing Detroit Metal City, the anime that comes out around this time that is about a heavy metal band.
Right. Okay. I didn't know that that was a reference to that, but I assumed it was some kind of, I don't know if it was a specific reference or a cultural reference, but this show is full of fucking references. I'm so glad that whoever subtitled this subtitled it as they did, because they missed a number of them clearly.
Yeah.
But there are a number of moments where a character does something and then the translator's note at the top says, note, this is a line from such and such character from such and such show who this voice actor also acted. And it happens all the time. And I'm so glad it was in there because I would not have been able to pick any of those up whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. No way.
And in my opinion, that would have made this show even worse because I would have just had all these characters spouting random nonsense and just going, why the fuck did he just say that? At least now we've got that extra context. Like, obviously, it's not... It's clunky.
It still doesn't go anywhere. Yeah.
It's all you can do, and it still doesn't go anywhere. But, like, I really appreciated that. And it made me, I don't know, it softened me to it a bit. And I think I'm going to disagree with you on that. I don't think it's awful. I just think it's just not very good overall.
The other thing this show thinks is really funny is sexual assault and sexual harassment.
Yeah,
particularly incestuous sexual harassment.
This fucking show, man. It was hard to watch. Both the, like, just general, like, he walks in and she's naked, and the then further explicit scenes where the older sister of the family is teasing.
Yes.
The middle sister. And by teasing, she's just sexually assaulting her. Like, full on, probably putting fingers where they don't belong. Like, yikes. Big yikes. And we're supposed to laugh at this.
Yeah.
Really not fun.
Or think it's kind of hot is the other thing it's angling towards, which I also don't think that.
Especially considering the middle sister, whose name I don't remember. She's the blonde one.
Yeah.
Her thing is that she is like a university graduate, like a probably a, you know, 20-something, 23, 24-ish, whatever.
Yeah.
But she looks like a 16-year-old. She looks even younger, potentially. She's a loli, effectively. Like, she looks young.
Her older sister repeatedly refers to her as a loli.
And her older sister is the one that is assaulting her. And I'm like, nah, dog, I would feel less bad if this was, like, her sexually assaulting our main character. Because at least, like, the ages are somewhat more appropriate, potentially. But, I'd still yuck out at that. But, oh, God, just... No, please don't.
We'll talk about the three sisters here because the setup for this, a lot of the structure of the show is that he comes on board as the trainee butler. Everyone else is assigned to a particular sister who you're the main seven of, but he kind of rotates between all of them.
Again, this is that visual novel thing. They needed a way for the character to be able to hit multiple different people to open up all the paths.
Yeah.
Creative, I guess. Like, you know, there's a way to get around that barrier, but...
Yeah. The older sister is Shinra. She is a orchestra conductor is her main thing. She's got a very, like, serious public persona. But when she gets home, she is, as we've described...
lewd. Offensive, not in like an outward way, but just like offensive to watch. Still somewhat serious, but yeah, just not the greatest person, honestly.
She's the one of the group who is embodying the most like rich girl behaviors.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely feels like she thinks she owns these people.
She's got power and influence and she swings it around, yes.
Yes, and not just swings it around, but takes advantage of it. More than once.
The middle sister, Miyu.
Miyu, that was her name.
Yes. The blonde twin tails girl who, as we say, she's not doing anything.
I love it. At one point, I guess it's a Japanese phrase that I hadn't heard of before, but in English, they like turned it, it becomes she is a like a home security personnel because she is just at home all the time and is looking after everything.
Yeah, Frita is the phrase that they used to refer to her at one point.
Yes, yep. Frita is a very Japanese word. Freeloader, basically.
Free timer, which is someone who doesn't work a full-time job. This was a big thing with the Japanese economy at the time where they were really freaking out about people in their 20s who didn't go get an office job and instead were working less secure hours.
Yeah, and it is still somewhat of a thing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But because they have a pension system over there.
Yes.
And all the money's got to go in the pension system. So if you aren't working a full-time job, you're not putting in your quote-unquote fair share.
Yes.
For all the people to retire with.
And so that is still an issue, but it's less forefront at the moment because more than anything, like, that ties into the idea of Japan has an aging workforce and that combines with the low birth rate, which was a thing in 2008, but is even more of a thing in 2024 now. Like, it's... That is the main dominant problem they're trying to solve.
Yeah. So, she's very smart. She invents shit. She's invented this weird little egg freak.
She's invented this weird robot egg called De Niro.
Yes.
Why is it called De Niro?
Again, we're just doing references without actually needing to put a joke behind it.
Is it a reference to Robert De Niro? Is there another famous De Niro? Because it doesn't...
No, it's almost certainly Robert De Niro.
It is? Because there's nothing about him that makes me think, oh, yeah, I get like that. Yeah, definitely Robert De Niro. Like, it's just a weird name for an egg.
Yeah, and part of the gag here is also that he is voiced by a Doraemon side character who's fairly famous. I don't have the name of this character off the top of my head, but the schoolyard bully in Doraemon.
Right, yes, the big boy. They mentioned that in the subtitles at one point when he made a joke like that. And his name is definitely distinct. Mm. And I'm going to say all the voice actors in this are phenomenal. I couldn't really pick anyone where I was like, that's kind of weird. When they deliver their lines from other shows, it's awful. But that's not because they're delivering them poorly. It's because that line just doesn't fucking belong in this moment right now.
The script sucks. They're doing their best with all they got.
Yeah, but all of the performances are really good. I couldn't really pick anything that was like, oh, that was bad. Again, no particular standout moments because the script didn't really allow that. But, like, no complaints.
Yeah. The younger sister here is Yume, who is the one high schooler in the house.
Who, her gimmick is that... Nobody notices her, and she gets forgotten about.
No, you might be mixing her up with Haru there.
No, they both have it.
Like, they both have this.
They both have the same gimmick. The thing is that she goes through an arc.
Mm.
I say an arc because I think it got resolved within one or two episodes. But like by the end, they kind of figure that out. Her other like half of that gimmick is that she doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know what her character is, what her personality is.
My read off it was definitely, she's just got a bit of a plain personality.
Yeah.
And she's likable. She's the closest to a normal person in this. But because no one else in this is a normal person, it really stands out.
Yeah, especially, we can also talk about the fucking side characters. I'm not talking about the butlers and things. I'm talking about Yume is still a schoolgirl. She goes to high school and she has like three, four high school friends.
And all of them fucking suck.
One of them is a sadomasochist, and that is literally, that is their character. There is nothing else there.
Yeah.
They rock up on screen, and they're already kind of like sweating, and then somebody says one thing, and she just starts breaking down, going, oh my God, oh, it feels awful, but I love it. And it's just weird. It felt like a 12-year-old wrote some of this stuff, just so weird. Then there is... like a pretty plain girl who's quite tall. She didn't seem to have any personality whatsoever. And then there is the other rich girl who has a cross-shaped scar on her head, which is not explained in the anime. They actually went, if you want to find out the origins of that, go play the game. And she's an asshole.
Yes, Kugi Agaha.
Yes.
Who is the one of these characters that becomes more of a character in this. She's also got a butler who follows her around.
Who she physically assaults.
Well, yeah, and we do another sadomasochism gag there.
Yeah.
Because he loves getting beaten up by her.
And because we just needed more of that gag, you know? We didn't have enough of it.
For a show that dips into S&M stuff so much, I don't think the show fundamentally gets the appeal of S&M.
No. Again, that's why I think that's why, like, it feels like a 12-year-old wrote it or something, like a young teenager who's just learning about these things, and he's like, I'm going to write something sexy, and it's not in any way. Basically, it's the shit that I would have probably written at that age if you'd given me a pen and a pencil and time to myself.
Mm. Yes. We then have the other staff who work there, the colonel, this butler, the head butler, whose thing is that he has a big pointy mustache and a wider range of superpowers that just show up at any given time.
Yep. Definitely a military man as
He's
well.
He's a former French legionnaire.
Yeah. Fantastic. Like, honestly, he might be my favorite character just for the batshitness of it and the, I don't want to say depth of it, but the variety of it. There's so many, like, weird things happening with him that they're just like, what the fuck?
He's not nothing. And I think where this show is at its strongest is when we are doing butler training sequences.
Absolutely.
These, like, they kind of land the jokes here.
Yes. For sure. If we want to skip ahead a little bit, there's a moment when they have their beach episode. Mm. Ren has, like, in the episode before, Ren has done something wrong. And instead of firing him, the colonel says, hey, why don't we take him to the island to train him? And they go, yeah, cool, nice idea. So everybody goes to the island and has a nice holiday, beach episode and everything. Whereas Ren goes into a cave on the island and starts training. And... as an example of one of the jokes that he is involved in, the colonel at least, as he goes into the island, the colonel asks him to write his name on a sheet of paper and a clipboard. And he goes, what's this? And the colonel goes, oh, it's just like a...
Yeah, boilerplate waiver, it's fine.
No, no, he doesn't even say that. He says, it's just like a guest book. We just got to make sure, you know, if anyone's coming in here. And it's written in English.
Yeah.
I sent you a screenshot of this thing because I needed to be able to tell everyone what this says. Because, this is when the main character has been told that this is a guest book. It says, recognizance. I am boast, risk of thing, the engaged chiefly. It is sworn to here dedicated this body all one's life. That's just the first half. Hang in a minute.
Thank you, Google Translate.
I'm going to get there. Therefore... the thing that the act contradict to the working hard rule is not done to training because of becoming the steward who is duty at all is savor here. Sworn here, I think.
Yeah. And
amazing.
And that's watertight. You take that into any court of law.
Yeah. We then find out 20 seconds later when Ren kind of like, you know, gets hit by something and he goes, what the fuck? I shouldn't be doing this. And the guy went, you signed this, you signed all your rights away. I'm like, dog, that's not what that says. But in this moment, there's that joke. But then in this moment, when he first originally signs it, the colonel says, don't worry, I'm not going to sell your signature off to the French Foreign Legion. And I'm like, what the fuck is that joke? Why is that in here? Who the fuck's going to get that? I got it, but I'm weird. So his jokes and things involved with him land pretty well with me. Honestly, like, I liked him as a character. Mm. It's just the rest of the shit around it. It's just kind of like meh.
Yes. The bit I liked about that episode, because the infraction that he gets sent to the island for is that he serves Miyu tea that is too hot.
Oh, yes.
Because
and he
she's
burns
trying to be
tongue.
An adult and she wants to order a black coffee. And then burns her tongue. And he has a bunch of resistance bands strapped to him. And he has to, like, do reps of pouring tea.
Oh, it's like, unnecessarily good for this show that is just kind of bad.
If we'd done more of that stuff, this could have gone somewhere. It could have been not entirely terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunate.
Well, speaking of very low-hanging gags... when we move over to the staff side of things, the maids who are working there, the head maid is Benisu.
Which, when she's introduced, is cause for a penis joke.
Because it sounds like Penisu, which would be the way you would use penis as a loan word.
Yeah. The other day, you told me while I was watching I needed to record all of my laughs.
Yeah.
I did.
Oh, fucking hell.
I did. I recorded all my laughs, I should be clear.
Yeah.
I don't have my notebook with me. But I'm pretty sure that
I'm starting to suspect that you left your notebook at home just so you wouldn't have to deal with this cross-examination.
No, but I'm really interested because I want to hear your number. I remember my number because my total laughs, I noted them as laugh or chuckle.
Yeah.
It was like two laughs and the rest were chuckles because it was not really anything particularly amazing. But I counted them all together. 13.
13
I averaged
total.
About one per episode. It wasn't that. It was like some of them had two, three, and some of them had none. But, you know, on average, it would have been about one per episode.
My chuckle factor was bad. Probably three laughs in the entire show.
Oof. Oof.
Nothing here was fucking working.
I'm bringing that up now because specifically, I did not laugh at the penis joke. It was just, it was fruit that had just dropped on the floor already and somebody picked it up. It was just God, and they didn't leave it alone. The gag lasted for a good, like, minute. And I'm like, we don't need to keep doing this, guys.
Yeah, this is the other strong comparison to Family Guy. All of the bits go on for 30 seconds longer than is funny.
Very much so. Very much so. Other than the butler training bits where there's gags and that. They were all great, but, like, yeah. Oof, some of this stuff. Other than Benisu, we also have...
Natose is the girl with the eye patch who...
The tomboy with the eye patch who is our gardener.
Yes.
And has... They've all got, like, distressingly sad backstories that are not at all
I was delicately completely expecting tackled. For the eye thing to be a gag that they were setting up where she was going to flip it over. And she was going to have, a power eye, like...
I'm surprised they didn't do that. No, like, her backstory she lived on an island, so she's foreign. I think, like, half of the workers are foreign, technically.
We'll come around.
Her family was killed in a tsunami.
Yes, and her eye was gouged out by debris, presumably.
Wow! What a fun time for this fun, funny show about butlering! It's just so... out of nowhere. And like, I again, working from visual novel stuff, like from the ones that I've played, which again is like two, that's a thing. Like, you've got the fun stuff, but then everyone's got that baggage that you've got to try and, you know, help them work through and whatnot. But because this is not a visual novel, this is just an anime, it's just kind of brought up at generally a kind of random time and then just discarded and not mentioned again.
Yeah, that was one of the main things I remember out of another visual novel, Fruit of Grisaille.
Okay.
That's a fairly popular one, but it's like a high school comedy romance, and one of the girls in there, her backstory is that she had the thing happen to her, the soccer team that had its plane crash, and they were abandoned in the fucking Amazon jungle, and they had to resort to cannibalism.
What the fuck?
Is her backstory. So, we're not quite on this tier.
I should be clear. We're laughing now because of the absurdity.
Yeah.
We weren't laughing at the time because this is not funny in the moment.
No.
It is when you think about it, like, broad spectrum and go, why the fuck was that in there? What the fuck were they thinking? That's crazy. But in the moment, you're like, no comedy, just what the fuck?
Yeah.
Why?
So, Natose is a natural disaster survivor. You're right that Benisu was found in Europe.
Yeah.
She was an orphan.
She was an orphan.
Over wherever Shinra was studying classical music.
Yeah, I'm assuming like somewhere in Eastern Europe, Russia area, because her mentor, we find out later, is Russian, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Somewhere, Europe.
Yeah, I kind of hated that scene where the colonel finds her and brings her back to the hotel room.
Yeah, what the fuck are you doing, Colonel? Like, obviously, we know the Colonel at this point. He's clearly not going to do something to this girl. But she doesn't know that. She doesn't know him at this point in the flashback. Other people don't know. So clearly, what's just happened is this guy's just grabbed a girl as a sex worker. A girl who is like 8.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Oh. It ends up working out in the end, obviously.
No, like, I'm here to save you, 8-year-old girl.
Yeah, like, no,
come be indentured at the mansion where I work.
Why don't you just, like, rather than take her to the hotel, the flashback snaps to them at a restaurant and them eating some fast food, effectively. Why not just grab her and take, like, not grab her, but, like, take her to that restaurant? We don't need that scene with the hotel. It's just creepy.
Yeah. Ugh. Final staff member to talk about is Haru.
Haru.
A likable character.
Yes.
I'm going to say something very controversial here. I think it's a character that could have used more fan service.
So.
This show is too chicken shit to give you Haru fan service.
So, I'm trans, everyone. Again, just a reminder, so we all know. So, clearly I'm going to have some, like, some thoughts on this that skew a particular way.
Yeah.
End of every show, our outro is shots of all the girls in the show. Like, lying down in a suggestive pose, wearing their clothes, and, like, a little car goes in front of them and then goes back across and, like, scrubs off their clothes so they're just wearing their underwear.
Oh, yeah.
Where was Haru's shot? It was not there. I was waiting for it. I'm like, ooh, this will be interesting. This will be, oh, wow, yeah, we're going to get... Nothing.
Yeah. Fundamentally insane thing to do for an outro.
What the fuck? Looks good. Like, again, clearly... somebody had passion for this because it's not bad art. Mm. It is like quality art. Like there's no weird proportions or anything. Like it's very well made. But what the fuck, guys? Oh.
But yeah, so Maharu is the cleaning specialist who is attached to the house. And he's a boy, but he looks like a girl. He's got a long ponytail that he wears with a massive bow in it.
Yep. Which, what a mood. And his gimmick is that, more so than Yume, his gimmick is that he is basically unseen. Nobody ever remembers him. There are multiple gags where the episode ends and they're like, I feel like I'm forgetting something. And he's just like out in the forest somewhere. Like, guys, where is everyone? Yeah. We didn't get anywhere near enough of him. Which, like, thematically or like symbolically makes sense given what his thing is, that nobody notices him. We don't get much of him. Like, I guess that works. But then at the same time, I want more of him.
Yeah, it feels like you've set something up and aren't executing on it.
Yes.
Like, they have one scene at, like, the very, very end where the Ren has to, like, go and have a shower at the same time as Haru and finds himself getting flustered. Even it's like, no, it's a guy. Why am I getting flustered?
And they don't have a shower. And that moment disappointed me.
Yeah.
Deeply.
They don't even put him in even if just once they could have put him in a maid dress.
Yeah.
Instead of the butler outfit.
Yeah. Are we talking about Ren or Haru? I mean, honestly, both. If they put either of them in it, like, yeah, that would have been something.
Yeah. Because they are doing costume hijinks a lot in this show.
They are. Yes.
There are whole chunks of this show where it's like, all right, for the next 5 minutes, everyone is just going to put on Minxy outfits.
They have an episode where they go and do Sakura Blossom viewing, and there is a whole section of it where the older sister and the middle sister both, like, do a cosplay show where they just, like, cut between them wearing different outfits. Like, they go hard on the outfits on this. Mm. And Ren is not involved in any of them. He wears butler outfit or t-shirt and pants.
Yeah.
That is it. It's not even a different t-shirt on the different episodes where he wears a thing. I'm pretty sure it's the same t-shirt. And I'm like, what's going on? Come on. Ren is honestly kind of a boring dude.
Yes.
Which makes sense. Visual novel adaptation. Like, our main character is not a main character. It is you. So it's going to be an empty space for you to fill. But that then means that this anime feels kind of directionless, I'd say, at certain points. When you've just got this random dude with nothing interesting about him.
So what they try and do with Ren is he's got this backstory where he was abused by his father. And that's a big hang-up for him. And so, like, his main personality trait is that he is a people pleaser, which he explains later in the show is because I was always trying to not get beaten up by my father and, you know, trying to do all of the correct things to try and, like, control the situation and, like, keep everyone happy, even though you're obviously in a lose-lose situation. And it tries to make that, like, oh, but that's gone on to become your strong point now. Because it makes you great as a butler, because you're a people pleaser, and you're always thinking ahead and trying to work out what the girls around you want and what's best for them.
And that feels problematic. We've effectively said that, oh no, this trauma was good for you.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, no, that's not Shinra's, how trauma works, guys.
Shinra's whole speech is like, you didn't run away from him. You were delivered to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You have been prepared perfectly for me.
Yeah, yikes, yikes. Oh, fucking God. I need to talk about her more later, but God damn. Something I don't understand. So we've got Ren and his sister.
Yes.
They both ran away from dad. Mum is not in the picture.
Yeah.
We find out that mum died, like, when they were young. Dad at one point implies that she died when he was born. In giving birth to her.
It was a childbirth death, yeah.
But we see a very explicit flashback where he remembers the one time that he saw dad smile as a kid. And he was throwing a ball to dad, so they're like on opposite ends. And behind him is his sister and a woman behind her.
Yes.
Is that mum? I'm assuming that's mum. If so, how is she still standing here when he is clearly like 4 years old? If we've got the idea that like mum died in like giving childbirth, like, clearly that didn't happen for that flashback.
I believe what this is setting up to is if this show had have kept going, it would have revealed the plot twist that the two of them are not full biological brother and sister.
Okay. So, So Ren's like blood relative mum died during childbirth, and then dad got with someone else who had a daughter, and they became a couple. But then that woman left. I'm assuming that's
you're
what we're
not given with. A lot to work with.
Yeah,
but I believe it wants to steer towards that. It's a stepsister twist.
Yeah, okay, and that makes sense because
which
again,
if you're going to
we're
use
coming,
those, yeah.
We're coming from the visual novel where you need to have that excuse that like, oh, even though we're brother and sister, we're not actually brother and sister, so it's okay. Yeah, okay.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, it is. I'm just sorry. I have a headache because this is just so fucking dumb.
One of the things I probably resent this show for the most is trying to do heartfelt family drama episodes in the second half.
Yep. Yep.
So, to like cut back to the first half, the shit that was annoying me was, again, all of these reference gags. You have this one episode where it is based around Yume, where that's the one that opens with her doing the Death Note sequence, except she's just writing in her book, so there's not really a joke there. It's just we're animating it like Death Note.
Yeah, and the notebook that she's writing says Yume Note and is written in the same font. That's it.
Yeah. And he picks it up and reads it, and the entire first half of that episode is him narrating just like a weird, like a magical girl series that she's had in her head.
So in this moment, that is like, is the moment where they really go hard on the references and the VA, like voice lines from other shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
Not very interesting. Not very fun.
No, this got a laugh out of me when there was a commercial break in there.
I did like a commercial break. That was very
He goes, okay, she even writes commercial breaks into her fantasies.
That was a fun joke.
Yeah, and then the second half of this episode is everyone just sits around in a circle and takes turns trying to punch up Yume's personality and come up with a more interesting sister that they could have.
Yep. And again, this episode is the moment where all of those references and non sequiturs that just don't lead to anything, like really, really come to the forefront, and it's just, I don't want to say painful, but it's just nothing.
Yeah.
It's just so much nothing.
And when I watched this show, I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to bring this up and say, this is the archetypal episode of this show. This is what this show is trying to do. No, because in the back half, we start doing...
It hard pivots.
Yes.
It hard pivots into relationship drama and like trying to help people deal with their past demons.
Mm.
It doesn't do it well.
No, it absolutely doesn't do it well.
Not at all. So, yeah, like that is when we find out that, for example, our tomboy butler with the... gardener with the eye patch. That's when we find out her backstory of her family passing away in a tsunami. But that one was only covered for, like, 5 minutes, not even that. It wasn't even, like, the central core of an episode. The one where it was the one for Benisu when we, like, she gets... kidnapped and so does Ren, and then they have to go and find them, and while they're kidnapped she talks to Ren about her history and things like that, and the fact that, you know, she needs to be tough and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't say ham-fisted, but it's just boring. I didn't really care about any of it.
It's I think because it also makes the grave sin of trying to repeat plot beats here. This is Benisu's second kidnapping in as many episodes.
Yeah.
So watching this going, are they just going to kidnap her, like, as a repeating gag?
Yeah, she's
that only happens twice.
She's a super tough girl who gets kidnapped twice. That's totally what happens to tough people.
Well, she racks up gambling debts at the casino the first time is what happens. And
they keep her and make her work for them until she gets saved by the colonel's magic gambling powers. And then the second time they're on the island doing the training and stuff, and they... go off to get some food, and some skeevy dudes come and, you know, harass them, and they have a fight, and more dudes show up, and they take the pair. Really nothing. Just not really anything. And the resolution of the episode is, like, a native girl to the island, you know, who they've interacted with once or twice, sees them get kidnapped, and so goes back and tells the rest of the group so they can come back and save them all with their butlering powers. And then the cap on the episode is that they then go, oh, young native girl, we are indebted to you. We're going to get you some work. Is the same thing that happened to Benis.
She doesn't come and work in the mansion.
No, she doesn't. They just like, I think the intention was that we're going to get you work here. Like, we're going to recommend you for a job or something.
Yeah.
Which, Okay. What, like, we need to get into some social politics here. Butlering is a weird profession.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point of a butler and servants is that they serve people and whatnot. They are not slaves. Yet in this show, all of our butlers and servants and cooks and everything, all of our main cast, are effectively slaves and are very much treated as such.
Yeah, it is a kind of indentured work where there is a cultural expectation that your boss gets to, like, beat you up with superpowers.
Yep, or and just gets to tell you what to do, and there is no kind of limit to your working requirements. Like, you know, you could, for most work, and I'm pretty sure for butlering as well, there's, like, you're not expected to, unless you agree to it, you're not expected to bathe someone. Like, that could be a part of your agreement, but it's not just like, yeah, you'll bathe this person, why not? And yeah, that all, it happens in this, and it's so bizarre. And in this show, our rich Shinra, yes, her thing is that, like, she's got power and wealth. They describe the fact that, like her father, she is a bit of a philanthropist. She's like, she does some, like, environmental work and things like that, which, great, cool. But she also seems to own these people. And anytime she does anything, it's just, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. When we're not interrogating the fact that, why the fuck do you have all of this money? Like, where did it come from?
Well, it's inherited from their parents.
Where did that money come from? It didn't just come out of thin air. You don't make money from philanthropy. That's kind of the whole point of it.
Yeah.
Like, and nobody, like, there's a whole, also a class thing. Like, our main character, our two main characters were homeless at the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
And then they become not homeless thanks to the grace of this wonderful rich person. But, like,
yeah, and Benny and Natose are in the exact same camp.
Exactly. It's it, like, we're not going to talk about this weird thing of just plucking people out of poverty and not actually helping, like, helping them individually, but not actually helping.
Yeah, grabbing the entertaining-looking ones to be part of our found family that we are collating here.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And that was a part of why, like, this is what would make... help me tip it into it being actively bad is just that it doesn't address, it doesn't tackle any of this, it doesn't approach any of this, and it just kind of feels just kind of gross.
Since we are talking about the gross aspects of the show, Miu, at several points, you've got the screenshots here.
The other screenshots I sent you were of, I sent the initial screenshot because I was like, this is fucking weird. Why the fuck is this here?
Yeah, one of her interests is that she reads magazines that have a bunch of photos with six-year-old boys in them.
Yeah, specifically the first screenshot I sent was of a magazine that we see her reading. This, it took me a couple of tries to get this shot because this shot and the next shot are only on screen for about not even a full second. But this is a magazine. It is the September issue of Shorts.
Ugh.
And on the cover is a young boy of like 6-7 years old probably, looking wistfully out across the mountains. And the tagline on that image is, my uniform life. So I was like, what the fuck? That's kind of weird. Okay, whatever. So I threw it in here just so I could mention it. It's like, who the fuck writes a magazine about shorts? But then she opens it up and there are two more photos of young boys lying down in suggestive poses. And the caption on one of these is, sorry, the autumn wind blows through my clothes like
this. Oh, ugh, Christ.
It's honestly, what the fuck is going on?
I think the reason this really bothered me is, Shinra is obviously fucked. She's fucked in the head and she does all the shit, but people at least turn around and they're like, oh, it's fucked up, she does that. Or one of the things that Ren learns to do is to create diversions so that Miu can get out of these situations. And so everyone is like addressing, this is a shitty thing that Shinra does that we all need to work around. No sort of similar commentary on the fact that Miu is very into inappropriately young aged child boys.
At one point, she gets given a gift of a boy band from I think the 80s or 90s in Japan, and
They're also like 11-year-olds.
By boy band, I mean boys. I think they were about 10 or 11, they looked like. And she just gets given them. And we don't see what she does with them, but she takes them into her room to watch some more. Mm. And it's just like, yikes, I didn't think we would be dealing with some pedophilia. I'm sorry for ruining our for just ruining our chat history by putting those photos in there, but I couldn't keep that to myself because that was like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, weird shit.
Deeply uncomfortable.
Deeply, deeply uncomfortable. I feel like we should talk more about like the different character arcs, but honestly, they just feel like so nothing. I could kind of describe a lot of them in like two sentences. Let's try. Shinra's arc is that she is a very serious person and needs to keep up a very serious demeanor to make sure that she keeps getting sponsors and gigs and whatnot. Mm. But it turns out that serious demeanor and keeping that seriousness is means that she's a less personable and friendly person, and she's not enjoying her music. And by the end, thanks to Ren, she comes to recognize that, oh, if I let loose a little bit more, my music is better and everything's nicer.
Yeah, Yume's deal is that she feels that her sisters aren't as affectionate with her as they are with each other. Don't know why you'd want to get in on that fucking shit.
No.
And she finds out that it's because back when their parents died, she said something rude back at the funeral because she was a six-year-old who didn't know what the fuck she was talking about.
And Shinra, who would have been like, what, 10 at that point?
Held it against her for an entire life.
Yeah. And then they make up and Yume feels a lot better.
Yeah.
And great. She does like... she feels more comfortable with not having a character yet, but is going to find her character eventually. Like,
yeah.
She doesn't even develop a character. Like, it's... Hmm. Okay. Miyu's thing is that she is extremely smart and has a university degree, maybe even two, I can't remember. And she's invented a number of things. And so her income is basically she just sits on patent royalties, basically.
And she needs to be allowed to chill out.
Yeah, she is currently chilling out at home every day. As we said, she is Frida.
Yeah.
And her end of her arc is convincing everyone, helping to convince Shinra that it's okay that she's not doing anything. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
We could go into Ren and his sister's story and the fact that Dad comes back into it, but honestly, like, that's not even particularly well handled. I don't even, like, fully remember how they handled it because it just didn't make much of an impact.
He's got these trauma memories to it, so he actually can't stand up to his father, but then Shinra yells at him and he can stand up to his father.
Done. Seriously, don't watch this. It's just...
Do not watch this. Well, look, you said you wanted to watch something that was going to be bottom of the bin.
You said
you were going to throw the word trash around a lot.
All right.
And that you needed to watch something that was truly trash in order to be able to separate it from
the stuff
we've watched.
But here's the thing. I didn't even think I'd call this truly trash. Because we have those animation sequences that are actually like quite, if not nice, like at least effort has been put into them and they're clearly like... skill has been put into them, and there were a couple of those gags that were like, yeah, okay, I could see where this could be better, but it, like, again, this doesn't feel like trash necessarily. It just feels like meh.
You want to get worse? You want to go further?
Not right
down.
Now. not yet. I'm gonna need a week or two.
I don't think I can survive fucking worse.
I'm gonna need a week or two to recover from this, the mediocrity of this one, but like, I think we can handle worse.
Thank you for listening to Endless 08. I've been Duffo.
And I've been BJ. You can find all our stuff at endless08.com and on our social media.
If you know a real freak, tell them about the show. We'll see you next time.